Welcome to the Peep Show Podcast.
Your glance at sex and social justice.
With Jesse and PJ Sage. Welcome back to another episode of the Peep Show Podcast. We're going to discuss some important topics today, and we are honored to have Lena Paul with us. Lena is a porn performer and director who will be talking about James Dean's return to Evil Angel and why it's important for her to cut ties with them in response. We will also talk about creating trauma-informed sets and approaching our work with vulnerability and openness.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Peep Show Podcast.
Welcome.
It's been a while. We've just been so busy.
Yeah, so we've been meaning to get this episode out for a really long time, but we've had so much going on in our lives and in our work. We've actually been fairly productive doing other things. We co-authored our first piece together, which was really fun. That came out, I don't know, PJ, when did that come out? 2 weeks ago?
Sounds right. Yeah. It was on panty sales.
It was very fun. We talked to a lot of people who have sold panties about their business models and different issues. The most fun part of that was that we actually got the Postmaster General to issue a statement about whether you could send used panties in the mail.
The answer is yes, as long as they don't have a noxious odor.
Which we told PJ's parents, and they were kind of appalled. It was a funny conversation.
But anyway, so if you're interested in learning more about that, you should check out Vice's motherboard.
The title of that article is Selling Used Panties Online is Harder Than You Think. I did a bunch of other podcasts recently. So I was just on Ghoul on Ghoul, which was a really fun comedy podcast. So I did that. I talked about FOSTA and SESTA on Doug Henwood's show. And then I also talked about Academia on Working People podcast, which is a great podcast about working conditions.
Look at you.
I was doing a podcast circuit. We're so happy to get back to our own podcast now. We have a big event coming up this Friday, the 12th.
Yeah, that's right. So we are heading down to New York again for the Theorizing the Web conference. This time we are putting a panel on about the censorship and suppression of sexuality online. And so we're going to be talking to a bunch of people who are from communities that have been affected by all of the recent changes on the internet in the last year or year and a half, and new laws like FOSTA SESTA.
Yeah, so we have people coming from different areas too. So we have Cameron Glover, who is a podcaster and a writer and a sex educator. She's actually going to be a guest on a future episode as well, but she will be talking about how FOSTA SESTA has impacted sex educators. Samantha Cole, who's a editor and writer at Motherboard, is going to be talking about journalism, sex journalism, and FOSTA SESTA. Liara Rue, who is a sex worker and digital rights advocate, is going to be on talking about sex work issues. Sunny Moraine, who we've had on the show a couple of times, actually, is going to be talking about erotica writing. And Ramona Flower, who is a sex worker and alternative model, is also going to be talking to us about how FOSTA SESTA's impacted models and also the digital platforms.
Yeah. So we're super excited to have that conversation with all those great folks. If you are in or around New York City on Friday, April 12th, you should totally come to the Museum of the Moving Image in Queens and
say hi. You should watch our panel and you should say hi.
Yeah. And if you're not in the area, the event will be live streaming at theorizingtheweb.org. So you can check it out there and even submit questions via Twitter. So we would love to have everyone in our audience participate in whatever ways they can.
Also, another friend of the show and previous guest, Danielle Blunt, will be giving a talk earlier in the day.
Right. I think at the very beginning of the day. We got both ends of the day at this conference.
On Friday at noon, she's giving a presentation, and our panel is at 7:15. So there will be content from sex workers all day on Friday. So,
and we'll even probably be hanging out and getting social afterwards.
Yeah. So if you are in New York, drop us a line.
You know, or just show up and hang out with us.
Yeah, okay, that too. No, we're really excited. And we think that we're going to be able to record the entire thing and use it as an episode. So we should be able to get it to you one way or another. But live is great. So if you're in New York, it would be great if you stopped by.
That's pretty much it for us in terms of life updates. We have a really awesome interview today, and we don't want to take any more time away from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's turn to Lena Paul. We're here today with Lena Paul, who is a former partner in an agricultural startup who started moonlighting as a cam girl. This started her love affair with sex work and entrepreneurship. She spends most of the time working on her own media business or mentoring other talent on how to work on theirs. She's also the dog mom and a computer nerd who paints and reads in her spare time. So thanks so much for being with us today.
It is my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
We realized as we were talking right before we started recording that we were both at AVN. I'm sorry we didn't actually get to meet in person there.
Oh my goodness. I completely will have to make up for this next year.
We will be there again and we can all try to fit in everything that we have to do in the craziest week of the year.
Right. We always say, like, everybody makes the plans of like, oh yeah, let's see each other while we're there. And then we never do it. But we all know the intention is there.
We wanted to have you on because we saw that you were tweeting about the Evil Angel announcement that they are going to lift their ban on working with James Dean. And we wanted to get some of your reflections on that.
Can you maybe summarize for folks who didn't catch your thread or aren't aware of the story regarding
people
James,
who don't live on Twitter, basically.
Yeah, regarding James Dean and this consent movie. Can you just give us a brief catch us up on both what's going on with this movie and then what you had to say on Twitter?
That the end of January was the Adult Video Network Awards. And there was a Jezebel columnist who was following around an influential individual in our business, John Stagliano. He is the founder and CEO of Evil Angel Network.
Mm-hmm.
He invited her along as he went to interview a alleged victim of James Dean, Lily LeBeau, as she recounted sort of some of the long-term physical and emotional damages that she endured after experiencing workplace abuse at the hands of James Dean. And the reason that Mr. Stagliano was doing that was because he wanted to use that as the intro for his grand return, his acceptance of James Dean officially being lifted from his blacklisting from Evil Angel, which happened 3 years ago when the 13 women came forward alleging various forms of domestic or sexual abuse at his hands.
Mm-hmm.
Was the premise of the movie, of Stagliano's movie originally, was just that we were going to talk broadly about consent in the industry and people consenting to maybe rougher kinds of sex or the kinds of things that are portrayed in pornography as sort of a response to anti-porn or anti-sex work feminists or anti-BDSM feminists, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was kind of an FU to second wave feminism, which I can get behind completely.
Yeah.
Right, but then it somehow morphed. And maybe just because the James Dean story looms so largely over the industry or has for the past several years, but it somehow morphed to really center James Dean then ultimately, right? In this narrative.
Right. My outrage that I felt in that moment, and I try not to be a person that's very quick to anger. It takes a lot to really upset me. My initial visceral response to that when I was hearing about this on the back end was that Stagliano had spoken to multiple victims who had declined this interview and who had voiced concerns, and multiple people within Stagliano's organization. I mean, Evil Angel is a collection of directors. It's not like a cohesive vision. It's very libertarian, just like Stagliano is. He doesn't really police them in anything.
Right.
But multiple people within his organization were like, I'm nervous about this. I'm really uncomfortable with this. Namely women. He chose to continue with this endeavor. So the gist of my thread, it wasn't about telling anybody what to do. It wasn't about anything like that. It was a direct statement to my fans who request me a lot for Evil Angel, stating that I didn't think that I could continue to work for them in good conscience after the release of this movie. For me, as both a survivor of domestic violence and a sex worker, the idea of normalizing or celebrating the return of somebody who has credible accounts of workplace harassment, of workplace violence, is literally my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
And multiple women, both victims and not victims, I do a lot of advocacy in the mental health space, called me in tears that day. Just, you know, how could they think this was a good idea? On yeah. what planet did they think this was a good idea? And the really sad thing, too, was that I actually found out that my girlfriend, who my anniversary, I'm flying out to see her next weekend for our anniversary, is in this movie. And she was horrified when she learned that this was one of the other scenes and that this was it. And
yeah,
she was
that's really shocking, right? Because I don't know who your girlfriend is, but I assume that a number of performers probably signed on to do different sections of this film mm-hmm. without knowing that
right.
they were going to be wrapped up in this broader James Dean scandal that's happening and sort of implicated and implicitly kind of endorsing James Dean's return to Evil Angel.
Right. And my girlfriend is a friend, her name's Ivy LaBelle, but she's a friend of Joanna Angel's, and she had to go and say to Joanna, for anybody who doesn't know this, Joanna was in a relationship with James Dean for 6 years, and she alleges a history of domestic violence within their relationship. And mm-hmm. she had to go and apologize to Joanna and just say, oh my God, you know, I had no idea that this was going to be the context. I mean, Ivy has no problem working with James. And Joanna and many other victims have said, you know, work with him all you want. Just keep him away from me. It was a lot of women's voices were ignored mm-hmm. in the making of this. And I told my fans that I didn't think I could continue forward with a professional relationship with them in good conscience.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's really important. And I think that your tweets were really brave.
Let me back this up holistically. Like, I do want to issue a blatant statement that I believe victims. But even if we gave any credence to the schism that is within pornography right now about this particular alleged abuser, mm-hmm. if we said in a theoretical world, we don't think that these claims hold water mm-hmm. and we're going to move forward with shooting him. It was the centering of and monetizing of a victim's pain over the protests of other victims and other survivors, because Evil Angel had multiple critics that you can even see that implied in the press release from Jezebel from within their own company.
Mm-hmm.
It was that I had the problem with. Like, I want to make it very clear because I don't want to detract from the message here. Like, this isn't about James Dean specifically. Like, I'm not the court of law. It's about centering one particular content creator's preferences, his vision, dare I say ego, over the complaints and discomfort of victims. Because you're talking about really traumatic events here. Like, I have to tell you, part of the reason that I tweeted that was because a family member of mine, I received news on that day that she had been violently raped.
Oh my gosh.
And so for me, as somebody who both has a background as a victim and who has privilege here, it's not my goal to speak over victims or to silence them in any way, but to acknowledge that most women in this business don't feel comfortable coming forward and saying something. And I have a privilege to do so. So if there are any victims that are listening to this and have things that they want to say but don't feel like they can tweet it, obviously I'm getting something of a reputation for being mouthy, so feel free to DM me.
Yeah, that's really important. One of the things that I think I hear you saying is that the issue is that not only are they lifting the ban, but they're doing it by creating a movie that kind of centers consent violations and consent issues.
The whole movie Consent is not specifically about James Dean. It's about women having the right to choose over their body. And right. So I think what they were trying to do was center Casey's choice of, this is somebody who has had allegations, but my personal experience with them states that I feel safest doing these types of scenes with them.
Right.
And that is something that would be a really interesting analysis. You know, that speaks to an issue in this business of what happens when your friend get accusations leveled against them. Like, that's a great topic to examine. You can get thorny with that for sure. That's totally fine. For the case with my girlfriend and the scene that she shot for the movie Consent, from what I understand, like, I remember her telling me about that day and she was so excited. She was like, they came to my home. We talked for 3 hours. Like, I cried. I was so open and honest about what it means to me to be able to have control over expressing my sexuality and sex work.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to speak for her, but I get the impression that she's heartbroken that this is the direction that it was taken in. And nobody was told that this was how it was going to be handled.
When we talk about Casey, we're talking about the performer who is shooting a scene with James Dean in this upcoming Consent movie.
Right. Casey Calvert.
Yep.
And I love Casey. Casey is somebody in the business that I respect and admire. She is thoughtful. It is not my place to tell any woman what to do with their body. That's not what I am trying to get at here at all. What I am trying to get at is that this is beyond the pale of decency, expecting a victim to recount your trauma for clicks and sensationalism,
right,
in the context of like sexual gratification. Like, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
Which is also, I guess, part of what's going to be included in this movie. At least that's my understanding based on Tracy Clark Flory's reporting.
Based on the initial reporting, that's the impression that I get. I've seen some other stuff from people behind the scenes sort of like saying this was not what the movie was supposed to be about, but of course this is what it's being centered on. And this was like the one part that everybody was like, I'm really uncomfortable about this, knowing what I know about the behind the scenes part of this. Mm-hmm. I think the original goal of it is, we've been seeing like a lot of like documentary style pornos and showcases coming out.
Right.
Without like wanting to critique anybody's work, because we create entertainment, I think the impression from the creators was that a lot of those documentary styles are like really kind of fluff pieces and
right.
not really like truly actually analyzing anything. They're just kind of like press releases.
Right.
This was their attempt to make something real. I get where they're trying to go. Like, I can kind of follow, of course, what they're trying to go for, but this is why it's so pivotal. And like, I have to even acknowledge my own issue here. I should have spoken with victims before I popped off on Twitter. You know, I was speaking out of my own trauma at that moment, but that just goes to show you how powerful this symbolism is and what that means.
What we're sort of wrestling with here is when a media product comes out of one of the biggest studios in the industry and purports to represent the industry, we're actually all implicated in that. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people are more directly implicated, but I think Stagliano even says in that interview that this is supposed to be a response to feminist critiques of the porn industry.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. in a way, he's trying to really speak for and represent the whole of the porn industry. So yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me that you would have a gut reaction to that, because I do think we're all kind of implicated in what this movie is mm-hmm. and what this movie says and whether it does or doesn't represent our values.
We all are implicated, and it makes us all look bad. It makes us all seem like we have a sloppy and facile understanding of consent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's a good point. And Also, just the way that the James Dean story then now is going to overshadow everyone else's narrative within the piece, you know, is the other thing that I'm hearing you express concern about.
Sadness. Yeah, sadness. Because I think that they actually had a really good, when they were just letting the women speak for themselves,
mm-hmm.
It's a really solid, solid concept. It's when we start delving into areas where, and like, this is why inclusion is important. And this is why I hate to make it about identity politics to some degree, but
yeah,
when the individual who's making the decision and has the final say on the product doesn't have skin in the game. I mean, yeah. When they don't have skin in the game, that's when these types of problems occur.
Right.
There has to be better dialogue. And it's not just about the dialogue. It's about where that dialogue is taken. Because I think that in the last few years, there has been more open communication between management and talent. But whether or not that is implemented, whether or not that communication goes anywhere, right, is the question. I mean, obviously, whenever the James Dean thing came out in the beginning, there was tons of conversation. There was tons of things happening. And there wasn't ever a direction that was manifested into. Mm-hmm. I mean, whenever I made those statements, somebody, a director in the business who aligns themselves as an ally, who aligns themselves as somebody who's anti-big corporate studios. Mm-hmm. I'm coming back in town next weekend for my anniversary with my girlfriend. And I just put out the feeler that, like, if anybody wanted for me to shoot for a day, I had an extra day.
Yeah.
And the production manager for this studio, which isn't affiliated with Evil Angel in any way, said, "Oh, did you see her tweet thread earlier this week? Yeah, we won't be having her back for a while."
Oh, that's really unfortunate. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Don't be sorry. I mean, for me, honestly, they pay like 10% below rate anyway, so I don't care. You know, like, the whole thing for me is that this is what happens when directors say, "Oh, we need more transparency. We need more this, we need more that." But then tone policing incurs.
Right.
I think what you're saying is so important here.
Yeah.
It's not just about you personally and whether you can or can't find work, but it's really what this signals and the fact that if they're not willing to work with you because you made some really honest statements on social media, what does that signal to all performers in the industry? And what does that, you know,
especially if they make that public like that? So then performers who don't have, you know, as much privilege as you sees that, and then they feel totally silenced. Like, then they feel like they certainly can't say anything about what happens to them on set, because if you're being treated like that, then what's going to happen to them?
Right. Like, I'm number 15 on Pornhub. I do consistently professional work. Like, I'm a completely professional setting on set. This was completely an interpersonal difference that was taken to the extreme. And for me, you know, I'm totally fine with that. I texted the director directly after the fact and hashed it out with him.
Yeah.
But not every performer, as you say, has that privilege, which is why I preach so heavily, and it's kind of made me enemies in the business, but this is why I preach control of your own content and diversification of your income streams and ongoing jobs training outside of sex work. Not because I want women to feel like they have to exit sex work, but because the only way you can operate in this business is if you have options.
Yeah, if you have other options.
Yeah, otherwise you're at the mercy of the whims of these capricious directors and producers and studios, that agencies that run the business.
Yeah.
And anybody in general. I mean, this is applicable to anybody existing within late stage capitalism, frankly, that isn't landed wealth.
Yeah.
But it's remarkable to me because, honestly, what you were saying there, in my estimation, is like relatively tame. I mean, I think you were talking mostly about your personal reaction to this announcement that evil angel is going to start working with James Dean again, and your own personal decisions.
It was also like measured. You said when you were talking about Staglione, you were like, I assume that you actually haven't been assaulted. It's not even like you were attacking him.
Right. No, I mean, I don't have, like, that's the thing is that I think if you're going to be listened to at all,
yeah,
in our era of like cancel culture and like sort of the Twitter pylons, you really have to make sure that you're connecting with people as human beings.
Yeah.
I don't hate Stagliano. I don't hold any ill will towards Stagliano. It's simply a fact of the matter. Like, the reason that I choose to sever my professional relationship with them is because this is a line in the sand.
Yeah.
It's not about the person, it's about the behavior.
Yeah, and I think that came across, and that's why I said that. It didn't even seem like a personal attack to me. It just seemed like what you were saying is, hey, I don't think that you're in a position to understand what's happening with the victims, and therefore you're making decisions that aren't in their interest, and I don't want to be a part of that.
Right. But you also have to like contextualize this, that the person who chose to blacklist me is a 25 plus year veteran. And I'm coming in, I'm a woman, I'm young, I'm pretty, and mm-hmm. I'm saying things boldly and without apologizing for it. I hope that I don't come off as bitchy. There was like one point in my early 20s when that really would have undone me. And I'm just past the point of apologizing for being comfortable with my voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, just to reiterate, I just think that, you know, it's not like you're calling for an industry-wide boycott of Evil Angel.
No.
You're making a personal decision based on your own values and comfort level. And you just said, hey, here's where I'm at on this because, you know, I gave this some serious thought and I'm not comfortable working with the studio right now, or I'm not comfortable with the politics of this right now. And that's it. And so to be blacklisted essentially over having a personal
opinion
or like a or having like a personal political position about what's good for the industry, it seems remarkable to me. I mean, the implication in it of that to me seems to be performers shouldn't have opinions about what's going on in the industry, and that frankly is shocking.
It's not shocking to me, but it is wrong.
Yeah.
I think that, like, to contextualize that blackballing, a lot of that has to do with the fact as well that the reason that I'm able to say these things and what I really try to drive home with all of my essay spamming on Twitter is that I am able to say these things because I have content, because I have assets outside of porn, because I continue my education. I'm going back for my master's in the fall. I have these options, and I preach that extensively, that you have to control your own content and be your own boss and really work this as an entrepreneurial endeavor.
Yeah.
And according to my agent, I mean, like, I'm oblivious to it, but according to my agent, there are people that are afraid of me for disseminating these types of advice threads and trying to get girls to be more independent.
Because people meaning like directors and producers?
Right, like administrative establishment, like yeah. agencies, direct, like agents are very afraid of me.
Gotcha.
And that's so that's like so weird to me. Like, I'm just like, I'm a little girl from like a little small town in Kentucky. Like, you know, I was raised with like the yes ma'am and the no ma'am. And like, you have to respect your elders. And like, it's so strange to me. I still, as a young adult, am getting used to the fact that I have to stand up and look at men three times my age all the time and consistently tell them that they're wrong.
Yeah.
And do mm-hmm. that in such a way that they hear me and actually take that to heart, as opposed to getting defensive and stonewalling about it. And it's just the emotional labor that women have to perform double duty on whenever we're having conflicts with men. Because like a man
absolutely.
Can come and say, you know, like, hey, fuckface, I have a problem with this. They can get in your face and be aggressive. And men are going to take that away. They're going to be mad at the moment, but they might wind up actually listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
Women, you're sort of labeled as hysterical for that type of behavior.
Right. And totally written off.
Totally written off. You're completely dismissed. I mean, I spend so much time editing my thoughts and statements because every word is scrutinized for any amount mm-hmm. of emotion or hysteria or anything like that, especially within the business, because it's so funny, you know, these men are surrounded by sex workers, their living is off of sex workers, but you get them alone in private and you listen to the way that they talk about the vast majority of us, there's not a lot of respect in it.
Yeah. Mm. It's sad.
I mean, a lot of it is classist in its implications, because obviously the people that control these studios and the employers are coming from a different socioeconomic background in a lot of cases than the women that they're employing. And so there are differences in sort of labor and accountability. But emotional literacy is part of this job. And if you can't create a climate in which your employees, because that's what we are, your employees can have crucial conversations with you.
Right.
I mean, this is how we're in this situation with the consent movie to begin with.
Right. That's another really important thing I wanted to bring up. You had one thread specifically talking about Evil Angel, but you've also been talking about your own consent issues on
set. As a director.
Yeah, as a director, in like a really vulnerable and open way that I frankly haven't seen much of in the industry. I mean, we've had performers coming out and talking about their experiences and what went wrong. And, you know, we've had some of those conversations, but to stand up as a director and say that, hey, I could have done certain things better, that seems new and really powerful to me.
I really believe in the power of emotional vulnerability. As a general guiding principle to both my work and my life, if you can't come to a place of vulnerability with somebody, you can't have intimacy. And intimacy is the only way that, A, I do my job at all. I mean, everything in my job is based off of intimacy. But on the other dimension of that, what I think people working in vanilla occupations don't realize is that their entire life close on or close off. There is intimacy involved in working in close quarters with anyone.
Yeah.
And you have to put yourself out there first before anybody else will respond in kind to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It takes leadership through example.
Yeah. And I think what PJ's pointing to, and I agree with this, is that most people are not willing to do that, particularly in a very like public way. So I think that how you're approaching your career and what you're doing there is really powerful.
I have to live my life according to my principles if I'm going to have any longevity in this career. Like one of those things that I think is happening is that women and men, anybody that's in this business that is taking their clothes off for a living, truly anybody that's working behind the camera, there's a power dynamic that goes on. And that's kind of what I was trying to speak to in that thread of, if your talent don't trust you and feel safe with you, they're not going to bring those problems to you on set. They're going to bring it to their agent. They're going to bring it to their friends. They're going to bring it to the authorities. And if you don't have enough humanity to maybe like be able to be moved by that on its own, then like, let me talk to you about how this impacts you as a director in terms of your liability, in terms of your ability to continue forward working.
Yeah.
And also on getting the most effective product out of your team. Because what I can say for myself is that as a performer, I work best under the leadership of people that I feel safe with. I go farther, I go harder, I do more because I feel comfortable exploring my limits with people who take the time to build that connection beforehand. Because like the thing is that like what I think is missing from the directorial side of this is understanding that you are a participant in someone else's sexual experience. You're not an observer. You're actually a participant. You have a say in how the tone of this sexual experiment is going. And the things that you are doing, even if you're not touching the model, even if your clothes aren't off, are still interacting with them sexually. So if you're sarcastic, if you're short, if you're condescending, if you're barky, these are all things that are indicating to that talent that when something is going wrong in this sexual setting, the appropriate response is not to talk about it with you and fix it. It's to shut down. It's to dissociate, because you're also realizing that women doing sex work, especially since a lot of us are also doing escorting — I don't personally do escorting, but a lot of these women are — you have to realize the high incidences of sexual trauma that can be not even from your set or right. your sexual experience, it can be triggering to them and putting them back into their trauma. So even if they said no, and you obviously would honor it, the way that you've set up your set has made it inconducive to consent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's all really powerful.
Yeah.
I think that we don't talk enough about this emotional fluency.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, in part, you're talking about, like, if I can use a sort of buzzword right now, making trauma-informed porn or like a trauma-informed production site, you know, like.
Oh, I love that. I've never thought about it in that context. I love that. Right. I'm totally going to write about that. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I never thought about it in that way, but yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, cause it's more than just about being a woman or a man. Like, this isn't even about gender. This is also about making space to acknowledge trauma.
Yeah.
And that's a really contentious and thorny issue in porn, because a lot of outside perception of what we do is it sort of centered on this theoretical presence of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it gets pushed down and glossed over. Like, I was really disappointed that there was lots of private conversations, but I was disappointed that there wasn't more public critique of certain things that we've been seeing happening politically, not just even just the Stagliano thing, like other things that have been happening in the last 6 months in porn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that a lot of that comes from the idea any oppressed subculture is going to close ranks around their own when
right.
threatened from the outside. And you yeah. have to model that the way to get the outside world to sort of change around us is to connect with people. That's
yeah.
really what it is. I mean, I was just interacting with this troll on Twitter that was like, I don't know why I do this.
God bless
you. It's not, I don't know what this is. I should bring this up in therapy. My obsessive need to convert trolls. But anyway, so this troll was like saying something about like porn and people that do porn are degenerates and all of these things. And I just like cut through the bullshit. Like, I could get snappy and I could like roast him on Twitter and all of this stuff. And I'm just like, you know, it sounds like really what you have a problem with is that women are making sexual decisions that don't include you. And it's
yeah.
okay to want intimacy. It's okay to want love and intimacy. And it's okay to do that. But like, I think you're externalizing anger and frustration that you have about your loneliness. And he's like, you know what? Yeah.
Actually, oh my gosh, did he say that?
No, he did. It's on my Twitter feed, like right now. You can look at it. He was like, yeah, you know, I've been trying to like I've been trying new medicines and they're not
wow.
helping me. Like, I've been trying to get therapy. And, like, all of this stuff. And I'm just like, this is literally what happens anytime you show a troll like an ounce of kindness. Is like, these are the types of conversations that you have. You know, I hope that when like fellow lefties, quote unquote, like woke sex workers mm-hmm. look at my career and look at my public persona, that like we have the same goals, and I might be interacting with people that you deem less than,
mm-hmm.
but I can't participate in cancel culture, not because I don't think that it's valid, but just because it's not my communication method. Like, anger and ire has never really accomplished anything for me. It's only been through these like emotionally honest conversations that I've been able to ever change someone's mind or reach a better understanding together.
I very much like resonate with that. And that's, you know, how I tend to interact with people too, because I don't think that anything else really works.
Yeah.
And I found that too, like if somebody's like criticizing me or the work that I'm doing, if I respond with like an openness, those sort of conflicts dissolve.
Right.
What would you say to critics who might claim that blacklisting James Dean is a example of cancel culture?
I think that we talk about cancel culture, and then you have to talk about the realistic nitty gritty of liability. And
mm-hmm.
so like for me, frankly, as a director, I can say with the way that laws are set up, most studios are running sets that are technically out of compliance. I think it's pretty much an open secret that, you know, San Fernando Valley and the hills are chock full of porn sets. And if you're running a porn set in anywhere in LA County, you have to have a permit with the city. You have to wear condoms. I believe you have to have a proctor overseeing or something like that. There has to be somebody from OSHA that's like up in the mix.
Yeah.
Those are the things. And, you know, you can thank her, you can thank the AHF for that. But what that means practically is that liability and workman's comp are unenforceable. So if something were to happen on my set and that woman decided to sue, I would be held completely financially liable to that to the fullest extent. And I think that rather than centering this as cancel culture, what I think will progress farther is driving home to directors, like, you're choosing to play boys club could very well cost you your livelihood and your home and your family.
Like, yeah.
I don't even think we have to get as far as cancel culture. I think that we need to address this as a workplace liability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I think that certainly seems like a very effective strategy in terms of shifting the conversation and making some forward progress on these issues. But what about you personally and your own personal take on this? Because it seems like you feel as though this was a bad move on the part of Evil Angel to kind of reinstate James Dean.
I'm of two minds on the topic to some degree. I don't have a problem with a talent specifically requesting someone that they feel in their heart of hearts did nothing. And I believe that that's where Casey is coming from in requesting James. So on the human level, I don't find fault with that. On the meta administrative level, I don't think that that should have been allowed. To take this back, you know, James Dean was investigated by OSHA. They could find nothing that was definitive. Why, I don't know, because we all kind of have some observational story of things that have happened in the past with James. And we've all sort of known somebody that had a bad experience with him. But I think it's about not about whether or not he's a rapist, because I think that it is really hard with the way that our justice system is set up to really ascertain that definitively for sex workers. It's about the fact that he has bad set etiquette.
Yeah.
Rather than saying as a culture, I think right now the answer is, well, if you don't like that person, then don't work with them. Mm-hmm. But that's centering all of the responsibility on the victim. Like, this is a workplace setting. Mm. If your employees are bringing you a problem about another employee, that's your responsibility to interfere on that side.
Right. So, like, about avoiding sort of a hostile work environment or a work.
Right. And I think that employees, men and women, who create a hostile work environment. There's a top 10 female performer who is on my no list. She's the only woman on my no list because there's simply not enough money in the world that makes it conducive for me to do a scene with her. We just don't. There's just not enough money in the world because I think that she's toxic on a set. And I can't have a dialogue with you if you can't be a human being with me.
Right.
It's unfortunate because if we were working in an office, these things wouldn't have the same dimension, but like you're inside of me.
Right. That was one of the things that I thought was powerful about your thread too, is you made some analogy where you said like this, it's not like this is like baseball. Our jobs have really intense like emotional consequences as well.
You know, they want to joke about the instability of porn girls while refusing to take responsibility for the contributing instances that they were a part of, meaning the administrative elements of porn, the studios, the managers, the agents, the et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Like,
there's a lot of blame shifting. And I mean, that's honestly what promoted me to make that tweet thread about my own experience in the first place. Is like, listen, we've got to start owning our shit. I only have control over what I do. I can't control what you as a studio do, what you as director do. So this starts with me. So I'm going to own my stuff, and I can hope that that sets an example or opens a conversation at the very least. But that's the only thing I can do at the end of the day.
Well, I thought that was really brave. I actually really appreciate that you did that.
Do you want to, for folks who maybe haven't seen your thread on that, kind of summarize your position about how you're thinking about directing these days?
Sure, yeah. And like, I just want to preface to say that I wanted to use the incident that I'm referring to on my set in that tweet, which I'll get into in a second. But I wanted to use that as an instance to show that it doesn't matter how progressive or how woke or whatever you are. It's about awareness. And at any time, no matter how good you are, your set can come out of compliance with the principles that you aspire to keep your day running. And you have to sort of constantly check in and recognize the fallibility of that, how fragile that thing is, and really work to cultivate it and sort of like nurture that. When I was first learning how to direct, it's just chaos. You're just running around. You're trying to keep up. It's new. Nothing is like, you have a muscle memory when you're performing, and like all of that muscle memory is gone. And for me, that had all of my capacities sort of at max. And it also, I think porn is pretty casual. We're all pretty like real with one another in many ways when we're on a set. Like, there's not a lot of formality. And so there was sort of like, while I was running around doing stuff, there was kind of like joking and flirting that was happening to the female talent that she didn't feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
And I completely missed it. And I only found out after the fact that she had said something to her agent about having a bad experience on my set, and that she had wound up no listing the male talent that had been inappropriate. And initially, my response was informed by two things. One of them is, we all can have internalized prejudice against our fellow sex worker and not acknowledge that, especially those of us that come from privileged backgrounds, intellectual backgrounds, et cetera, like classist elements into how credible you think that their complaints are on a work set can play into your perception of this. So I think I kind of wanted to blow her off at first and dismiss her as sort of a princess or a diva, somebody who wasn't really like informed in like reality, because I had seen like bits and pieces of what he was saying, and like it's the type of quote unquote locker room talk that we engage in a lot of times on set. But the point was that she didn't feel comfortable addressing that in that context. Mm-hmm. And so it stuck with me. It really stuck with me, because I'm like, okay, if I missed it and I'm so touchy-feely that I can't watch a Hallmark movie without crying, you know, if I missed it, how the hell is what's-his-face, the next director that they pulled off Craigslist for Reality Kings, going to be able to see and do? I work for Mind Geek, don't fire me, guys. You know you did that one time. I know you went to Craigslist looking for photographers. It's okay.
Sorry, I just couldn't. Go ahead.
It's cool. But you know, like, it's kind of one of those things where you're just looking at that and you're going, practically, like, oh, how do we make this happen? Like, one thing that I saw, so I was just on a Greg Lansky set maybe 3 weeks ago, and I got through the end of the scene, and a PA handed me this tablet, and like on this tablet was this app, and it was like, hey, this is from the administrators of the company, your director doesn't see this, nobody sees this, this is 100% confidential. And they asked you a bunch of questions, you know, did you have enough food? Was there craft services? Was there towels? Were you treated fairly? Were all of these things happening? And putting that sort of in that anonymous ability to where you can speak without any fear of personal retribution, I loved that as a solution. Because obviously not everybody is going to be like me. I can't expect that everybody is going to be, you know, so informed on emotional literacy in in the day and age that we live in. It's just not realistic. So how can we create systems that keep people accountable and empower these models? I mean, that's what Twitter has become in a lot of ways. I mean, how much voice did women have in this business before they started opening up and airing their grievances on Twitter? Which is funny because I mean, a lot of directors bitch and moan about the failures that they have in presenting themselves on professional social media, but they also have enabled us to communicate with our management in a way that's so much more effective.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. Yeah.
And so how can we make that accessible for everybody?
Right. Yeah.
And build it in.
Right.
Part of what you're saying is, I mean, sometimes it's effective, but how do we like rebuild the system so that it's part of things that, you know, we check in and that like there is accountability built into the system, you know, every time.
I think that there, like, I've seen criticism online because I pay a special attention to criticism. It's not that I'm, like, sensitive against it. It's just that I think that your critics have a lot more to say about your character as a person than your fans. But one of the critics that I've, common critiques that I've seen is that I have a problem with mainstream porn, that I want to, like, take down mainstream porn or something like that. No, it's not that I want to take down mainstream porn. I want to retrofit mainstream porn. We can acknowledge that there are things wrong with the current system without destabilizing anything. Like, we can continue to move forward informed by better consent practices. Like, there's nothing inherently wrong with what we do. It's the sort of more subtle power dynamics and economic factors, those, as you said, informed by trauma. How can we inform porn about trauma?
Where can people find your work?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm Shadowbanned, so you'll have to go there directly. Twitter.com/Lena, L-E-N-A, is a peach. And you can find me on Instagram, LenaPaulXO. And you can find my upcoming website and studio at LenaPaulX.com.
Nice. Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure to talk to you today.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you both. It has just been such a delight to get to talk to fellow like-minded people in the business.
Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of the Peep Show podcast. I'm PJ Sage, and you can find me on Twitter at PJ Sage.
And I'm Jesse Sage, and you can find me on Twitter at sapiotextual or at jessesage.com.
We would like to remind you that we have a Patreon account and would appreciate your support. Please visit patreon.com/peepshowpodcast. Our music is courtesy of Joe Kennedy. The show was produced by Jesse and PJ Sage.
Signing off. Have a great week.